Welcome to Eat, Capture, Share, the podcast for food bloggers, food lovers, and everyone in between. My name is Kimberly. I'm your host. Episode 25. Hey everyone, welcome back to the podcast. I am so, so glad that you're tuning in. It is another bonus episode. Yes. I promised that I would drop a couple of bonus episodes between the end of season 2 and the start of season 3 in the autumn of 2019. So yeah, this is a really, really good bonus episode. Not just any bonus episode. It's a really good one because we're talking about Instagram. And I've been doing a lot of thinking about Instagram lately because if I ask anyone, a random person on the street or somebody within my food blogger community, if I ask them what their favorite social media platform is, they will always, always say Instagram. And that got me thinking, what is it about Instagram that makes our heart beat faster? What makes it special, better, different than all the other platforms out there? And there's so many for us to choose from. And I've come to the conclusion that there are really three things that draw us into Instagram, get us hooked on Instagram. And today's guest, Instagram expert, photographer, creative, business owner and writer Sarah Tasker from Me and Orla knows a thing or two about Instagram, and we really delve deep into the platform itself and then those three key elements that make it so special. For me, it's about creativity, it's about community and connection, and also about self-expression. And so we're really delving deep into these topics because Sarah, as I mentioned before, is a total Instagram expert. Now, a couple of things I'd love for you to stick around till the very end because I will mention some links and other bits and pieces towards the end of the episode. So definitely stick around until then. But also, just something to flag for those of you who don't know Sarah, which is a crime, frankly. Who doesn't know Sarah? Like, she is the Instagram queen. But just to say or give you a little bit of context, because Sarah doesn't mention it in the episode so much, but Sarah has an autoimmune condition, which she speaks about very openly on her Instagram, which is quite debilitating and has really affected her day to day and, you know, her life really. And Instagram was a savior in that process. And she now runs a multi-six-figure business despite having this autoimmune condition. So that in itself is pretty amazing. But just to say that when we did the interview, Sarah was touring for her book, her best-selling book, #Authentic, which she just wrote, and relaunching her course. And there was lots going on, which means that her autoimmune condition was flaring up a little bit, which also means that I was extra, extra grateful for her taking the time to speak with me and to share all she did about her journey on Instagram, as well as what's working, how to grow your Instagram, all the good stuff too. So yes, just a huge, huge thank you to Sarah, if you're listening, for sharing your wisdom on this podcast episode, especially considering that your health isn't quite where you want it to be. But I know you're going to take it to the best place possible. It also means that Instagram has made a life, a creative life, a thriving business life possible for Sarah, which a 9-to-5 couldn't. And it's a magical tale, a magical journey. And I'm going to stop talking because it's a lovely, beautiful interview. And yes, I can't wait for you to listen in. And I hope you enjoy this bonus episode. Sarah, thank you so much for agreeing to be on the Eat, Capture, Share podcast. I am not exaggerating if I say that. It's a huge, huge honor to have you here. So yeah, thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's genuinely an equal honor to be here. I love your podcast. I love everything you do. So thanks for the invite.
Thank you so much. I know who you are. I had the pleasure of meeting you a few months ago in person, which was really cool. But I, you know, there's people tuning in who don't know you, who've not come across your work. So I'd love to start off with introductions.
Sure. So my name's Sarah Tasker, and online I tend to create under the name Me and Orla, which was the name of my Instagram account I started 6 years ago when I was on maternity leave with my newborn daughter. And now Me and Orla is the family business. It employs both me and my husband full time. I have a podcast. I have a best-selling book. I sell online classes and go on speaking gigs all over the world. And it's literally changed my life. When I try and kind of encompass everything I do together, it can get a bit messy, but at the heart of everything I teach and talk about is really telling your story online and getting your message across, whether that's through words or through pictures. Often it's on Instagram because I am in love with the app, but always coming back to that, how do you tell your story?
I love that. Thank you. Now, again, you may have told this story many a times, but I know there are people tuning in who've not come across your work. So I'd love you to share how you started on Instagram and what propelled you to post that very first Instagram photo.
So I think, like a lot of people back then, I first downloaded Instagram just for the filters. And for a while, I was just using it like you could save photos with filters on without posting them to Instagram. And it was really like an image editing app. And then I remember the day that these little orange hearts popped up at the bottom of the app, and I was like, what on earth is this? And realized that you could get likes on pictures and actually your friends were seeing them, and started to understand that it was a social platform. Yeah. And then around that time, I went on maternity leave, so I was about to give birth. And I was finding I just missed having some creativity in my life. So I stumbled across, I think it was probably via Pinterest, the idea of a 365 project. So you post a photo a day. And I did some research and decided I was just going to do it using my iPhone because I had a DSLR, but it was back in the day when like you had to hook it up to your computer and then wait 20 minutes for the images to come across, and it all felt too labor intensive. So I thought, one photo a day, just using my phone, I can do that with a baby. And in the January, I said to myself, it'd be really cool to get to like 1,000 followers by the end of the year. But by the end of January, I'd already hit that. By April, I was at 35,000 followers, and it just carried on snowballing and changing my whole world.
That is incredible. What do you think it was about Instagram that made you kind of really go for it? Because there are so many apps, there were so many, even Flickr, like there were lots of different photo sharing apps even back then. What was it about Instagram that really grabbed your heart?
That's such a good question. And, you know, no one's ever asked me that before, so I don't know if I've thought about it. But I loved the community element, the way that you could really easily, like it, the interface hasn't changed that much. It's got more complicated. So back then it was super simple. Yeah. And you could just find other people and reach out. So I was a new mum and I had lots of new mum questions. And back then my community was all about connecting with other parents who were at home with young children. Mm-hmm. And it was such a lifeline, like to be up at 3 a.m. breastfeeding and to be able to open my phone and find someone else who was in the same situation and feel less alone. That was an immediate reward to me that kept me going back for more.
Yeah. Awesome. Now, you know, I always say that when I was growing up, creativity really was something that not even necessarily other people did, but it wasn't something that we cherished as a community or as a society. And most certainly, I mean, I was a dancer, for example, and the thought of doing that as a career, that wasn't really the thing that a nice middle-class girl did.
Yeah.
And now we're in this phase where creativity is celebrated so much more. And I'd love to know what creativity means to you, and also how you keep feeding creativity, how you keep nurturing it.
That's such an interesting point, and it's so true. And I think about the difference between how creativity was encouraged in my childhood versus in Orla's childhood. So she's six now. Yeah. And like my favorite thing is when she just gets all of the craft materials out and all the old cardboard boxes and starts gluing and sticking and painting and making. And I can remember by contrast, when I would do that as a child, it was really seen as messing about. It was seen as kind of, oh, you're going to make a mess. And it was really kind of looked down on. Whereas now I think we do appreciate it. Like as parents, anything where our kids are not staring at a screen, we're like, oh my God, I'm nailing this parenting thing. Look at my child. She's using scissors. And I think a lot of the way I parent all like that has come about because mm-hmm. I've had to slowly realize that creativity was what was missing in my life and that yeah. it's something I've always had to find a way to seek out. I mean, I didn't necessarily always recognize it as creativity, but it was always trying to burrow its way out of me. Yeah. And I'm certainly not the first to say it, but creativity is absolutely a muscle that gets stronger the more you use it. So for me, like Instagram was the perfect place to kind of reconnect with creativity because the project, you know, one photo a day, it gave me really clear parameters and it gave me no excuses. Every day I had to create something. And some days that was easy and you just, you know, the light would come through the window and the picture was there. But anyone who's ever tried to take pictures for any kind of deadline or purpose knows that sometimes you have to work really, really hard to make mm-hmm. the picture happen. And I learned such a lot about myself and my creative process and what worked and what didn't work by kind of putting myself in that framework of once a day, I've got to take 10 minutes to really nurture this part of me.
Yeah. It's so interesting you mentioned that because somebody I had on the podcast, Elise from Elise Gets Crafty.
Oh, yes.
She's amazing. And she talked not about the 365, but the 100-day project, which is where you're going to commit, which seems more doable.
I have manageable.
Yeah, it's like, okay, 365. But it's that same process that you're talking about, that flexing that muscle, that working that create. And so is that still how you nurture your creativity? Are you still creating daily, weekly? Where are you at with your creativity? Do you ever get tired of creating?
Yeah, I've really been in kind of a lull lately. And it's funny, I've been having a lot of conversations with other creative friends about what you do when you kind of enter this period of more quiet, kind of rest, the season of rest within your creativity. And one of the topics that's come up is maybe I need to do 365 again, even if it's not to share, even if it's just purely for myself. And I think it's very easy to fall into the trap when your hobby and your kind of leisure time creativity turns into a job, which is a dream for so many of us. And it's a wonderful, wonderful privilege, but it can change your relationship to that creative process. Yeah. And inevitably you start to make demands of your creativity that it might not be ready to meet, or it might not, you know, be there to meet. So it changes your relationship with what you're doing. And for me, I kind of, one of the ways I've been tackling it lately is just to look for new creative outlets, look for things that are not going to be money makers and not going to be part of my business in any respect. They're purely for me and they're purely an indulgence. And I'm a big, big believer in following your interest, even if it seems to make zero sense at first, even if you're like, this week I am obsessed with, I don't even know, like baking and your business is all about finance. Yeah. It might make zero sense in your life, but if you follow that interest and follow that urge, you will uncover something about yourself and about the way you work that will benefit all areas of your life.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. That's so so beautifully said. Thank you, Sarah. Now, I was wondering, with Instagram, do you feel that, like, do you ever fall into that comparison trap? Like, have you ever found using the platform to nurture your creativity has kind of backfired? Or how do you guard yourself from that sort of comparison stuff?
I try to stay really strong on this one, partly mm-hmm. because I think a lot of people come to me for Instagram advice and I don't want to be in the trenches of like worrying about how I compare to everybody else, because I don't think I can be of service if I'm in a place of crisis myself.
Yeah.
But obviously there are moments, there are times when you look at someone else, everyone has like their ebb and flow. And sometimes it's when things are low for you that someone else is having a high point. And it's very, very human to look at that and think, well, they've got something figured out that I haven't, mm-hmm. or, you know, they've got the X factor that I just don't, or I've lost it, or all of those thoughts. And for me, I always have to kind of come back to the creativity. I have to come back to, I'm not doing this for the numbers. I'm not doing this for anyone else. I'm doing this because my life is enriched by sharing and creating this way. And a really wonderful thing that I have that I can tell myself is that everything I've ever built or made online has come from not doing what everyone else is doing, from finding my own path and from doing the thing that quite often has made other people go, what? Why is she doing that? And then it's turned out to be a great decision. So comparison doesn't serve me in that. Trying to keep up and match with everybody else doesn't serve me in that, because it's going to take me away from that path that's always actually been a really helpful and a really true one for me.
Now, Sarah, you said something which kind of leads really beautifully into my next question. And you mentioned that you've doing things that no one else really is doing. And a lot of us wonder how we can find our unique style, our unique voice, and stand out in this platform that just keeps growing and growing. So I wonder if you have any tips or advice that you can share with our listeners around that.
Sure. It is a difficult thing, especially like the more voices come in, the more the point of distinction we have becomes smaller and smaller, because there's always someone who's similar to what you're doing, but they're never going to be exactly the same. I'm a huge, huge believer in really consuming diverse types of inspiration. Mm-hmm. Like if you consume what everyone else is consuming, you're going to create what everyone else is creating. So don't rely on Instagram alone to be your source of inspiration. And that's where...
Yeah. I said amen. Yeah.
Yes.
So agree.
That is where all those different elements of yourself and all those different interests and passions get to kind of come to fruition and all combine. And, you know, whether it's food magazines that you love, or whether it's, I'm trying to think, like a photography exhibition that's happening near you, or just going out and walking in nature, or listening to old vinyl LPs. Like everyone has all these elements that feed into their imagination and their creativity. And the more we can lean into that instead of leaning into, well, what is everyone else doing?
Yes.
How can I emulate that? How can I be the same as everyone?
Totally. And actually, you know, I'm also wondering for you, Sarah, I know you've taken a few steps back in terms of creating, but I'm also wondering if that quiet period, better said, I'm sure that during that quiet period, there are lots of thoughts floating about and you perceiving the world around you in a very particular way, that when you start creating again, something fresh and new is going to come. You know, I'm convinced of that anyway.
I hope so. It's always the fear, isn't it? When you are in that moment of like the fallow period, there's that terror at the back of your mind that's like, what if I never have another great idea? They're all swirling around and they're all cooking, and it's that thing where you have a day where you're like, this is it, this is the idea, and you pour all yourself into it and you make a ton of notes, and then the next morning you wake up and you think, no, that's a terrible idea. But one of them, I'm sure from past experience, one or two of them are going to rise to the surface and turn into the next thing that
Definitely.
I do.
Because I think just sorting your thoughts and having quiet time is part of the creative process.
Yes.
You know, like it is part of it. It's an unsettling part of it, but it is so important.
And I'd say that's every day as well. It's seasonal, and there are times like this that I'm taking where it's more of a time of rest. But it took me so long to realize that going and like lying on the bed and staring at the ceiling, or sitting and looking out the window, or reading a book, that needs to be a part of my working day as a full-time creator, because that is part of the creative process. Like you can't always be 8 hours you're sat staring at your computer screen. It's not that framework we've been taught about like what a job looks like just doesn't apply to the way humans create.
Totally. Well, actually, I've just finished reading Daily Rituals of Creatives, I think it's called. Yes, you will love this. I loved it because it's about creatives from choreographers to, I think, Albert Einstein's in there, to writers. And the vast majority of them only wrote or painted or whatever 3 hours a day. And I was like, oh, thank God. You know, it's okay. If Albert Einstein can do it, it means it's good enough for
me. Permission. That's what we're all looking for, like permission to do what actually our brains and our bodies have been trying to tell us we want.
Yes. Sarah, you have not just created an amazing Instagram platform, but it also feels that you have built this online community around your Instagram. Can you tell us a little bit about how one creates community online?
this is something I've always been really fascinated by. Like, we talked about being a bit older. And so my internet adventures all started pre-social media, back when everyone hung out on forums. Like, if anyone remembers, like, bulletin boards and forums. And there were a couple I was members of that were real communities. They were real, like, it was family. We checked in every day with one another. We visited each other around the world. We sent one another Christmas presents. Oh, wow. And I was always, even back then, really analyzing it and really looking and saying, like, what makes some people gel and become a part of community? What makes someone able to create that community around them, and what gets in the way? Because there's a barrier, isn't there? There's the barrier of the screen and the keyboard.
Yes.
That means our natural ways of communicating and connecting are kind of interrupted. Mm-hmm. And so I think I'd kind of been carrying that on. There were various other apps and websites and things that I kept analyzing and watching, so that by the time Instagram came along, so ready to dive in and kind of find a community to be a part of. And for me, I think community is different from following. And I think that's where a lot of us go wrong. We think, I need to grow a following. And then we get those numbers and it doesn't convert to what we had hoped for, or for what we thought it would look like. So to me, community, it's like a space that you can hold. And it's a place where people can connect and conversations can happen. Mm-hmm. And that can happen anywhere. It can happen on Instagram. It's usually kind of in the comments and then in the places that spring from there. Mm-hmm. It could even be, you know, on an email list, you can build community. It can happen absolutely anywhere. But yeah, I think it comes when we don't focus on the numbers, because actually, if you try and create a community that's just got absolutely everybody in it, then it doesn't really serve anybody. Mm-hmm. And what we know, what we can see from like real world examples, is that communities that gel and that stick together and that are strong are when people are brought together by a common shared goal or interest or belief.
Yeah.
And the best way you can attract those people is by keeping that goal or interest or belief at the heart of everything you create. Mm-hmm.
Do you love Instagram as much as I do? Cool, because I've got a couple of things I'd love to tell you about. Did you know I have a free PDF containing the 6 tools I use to leverage my Instagram? If you want to grab a copy of this free PDF, all you have to do is head to the show notes for this episode, episode 25, sign up to the mailing list at the end of the show notes, and the PDF will be sent straight into your inbox. The other thing I'd love to tell you about is my Instagram series. It's blog posts all about Instagram. What's working, what isn't working, how to grow your Instagram, all that good stuff. So again, I will pop a link to that in the show notes. Right, now back to the podcast.
Yeah, I totally agree. And as part of your online community, I also think there's something... I'm going to actually pose this as a question. You know, I'm wondering if the fact that you have a podcast, if that has helped further build the community, and also your captions and the fact that you write a blog, your voice is just so clear. And so through that, the people that resonate with that voice that you have are going to gravitate more strongly towards you. And whereas what I notice, you know, there's accounts I follow that I really like, but I don't feel part of their community. And often it's because I can't hear their voice.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense when I say.
We connect with other humans, right? And that's kind of, for me, that's always what it comes down to. That's what I'm looking for when I meet someone online, is that human on the other side of the screen who I can connect to. Yeah. And I do think there's kind of this trends and it ebbs and flows, but there is a real temptation online to edit out some of our humanity and present a version of ourselves that has a little bit more gloss than the real version. And I get that temptation so much. Like, you only have to look at my Instagram feed to see that's the highlights of my life. Like, you do not see the 90% of the time I spend lying down having a nap. Yeah. But I think, it's really, there's something in and this is where the word authenticity comes in, as overused as it is, but keeping that authentic, real human in there, however that comes across for you, is the way that we can actually make genuine and meaningful connections. Because otherwise people are connecting with a facade and they're not getting through to the real you.
Yeah. And I think also if you create that facade, it's so hard to live up to it.
Yeah.
You know? So
yeah. I can't imagine anything worse than building this amazing gift of community and an audience that wants what you're making, but feeling like you have to pretend you're someone else.
Yes.
In order to satisfy it. Like that must just underline so many feelings of imposter syndrome and self-doubt every day.
I couldn't agree more. Sarah, now I know there's a lot of people who love Instagram, and there's also a lot of people who are tearing their hair out.
Yeah.
Because every time when they think they figured Instagram out, Instagram changes. So on that note, I would be really curious to find out what you know currently works on Instagram in terms of growth and reach and all those vanity metrics that we all love.
Yeah, we all love them, and that's totally human. And like, they're not meaningless; they have a value. So, I don't think anyone should beat themselves up about caring. Mm-hmm. So, like, from a really technical perspective, right now carousel posts are great. So, those are the kind of the gallery ones where you can do like 3 or 4 grid posts within one, and people can slide through.
Yeah,
you might have noticed this on your home feeds if you're listening now that you can see someone's kind of cover photo for the gallery on their grid or on your home feed, sorry. And if you don't engage with it, so if you don't click like and leave a comment, for example, you're then going to see other images from that carousel spaced out throughout your grid over the next couple of days. So as a creator, that means you have like 3 or 4 opportunities to grab your audience by putting images in a carousel instead of simply putting them on their own. We're seeing IGTV is getting lots more traction. Instagram are really pushing it for all the obvious reasons. It's not taken off, I don't think, in the way they'd originally hoped.
Yes,
so it's kind of a much smaller pool right now that you get to be a bigger fish in. So if you are someone who enjoys creating video, or if your content lends itself to video, it's a good place to experiment and maybe play around with putting that on your grid, sharing it on your stories, but also having it on your IGTV. Mm-hmm. And then kind of on a more like human note, I think it's the conversation starters and the posts of real value that are seeing the traction, because as organic discovery is going down, so that's like your ability to get on an explore page, your ability to be seen under a hashtag, that's reducing and reducing. So we're seeing this metric of getting other people to share your work is becoming more and more key and significant. And that is the thing that's making people grow fast. So I think that kind of comes back to things like thinking about how useful is what you're sharing? Like, is it just literally a picture that's kind of a little bit self-indulgent and a 2-word caption, or like a happy Monday caption, I always call them, that people are going to like click like on and then move on? Or can you make that into something that actually gives people something to take away? And that could just be a quote for them to hold for the day. It could be a recipe. It could be a playlist. It could be a joke. It could be a picture that just uplifts them and makes them go, oh, I just need to spend a moment with it. Mm-hmm. Value can be absolutely everything and anything. But when you get it right, you know about it because your audience really responds. And that's when the shares start coming, because people say, this is so true for me as well. And you all need to look at it.
Thank you. Now, you touched on something, which is IGTV. And I've also really noticed how, you know, Instagram is indeed pushing it. And I don't know if you or somebody within your circles has played with IGTV. Do you know, what's working on IGTV? And like in terms of what types of videos should we be posting? Or is this really a time where we need to play and experiment and see what works? I don't know if you've got any thoughts around video content in general on Instagram that you'd...
It's really individualized, because obviously everyone's audience is there for such different things.
Yeah.
I've seen a few people who are makers and creators who have had loads of success with doing either time lapses of themselves creating, or kind of quite, unpolished video of their creative process that people can watch and kind of dive into. And that works just as well on the grid as it does on IGTV. Mm-hmm. But then for other audiences, they're much more looking for that kind of more YouTube style content of maybe like an outfit being presented, or a really glossy, beautifully shot video. So I don't think there's any hard and fast rules. Yeah, IGTV have just announced now that you can post landscape video, which I think is going to help a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So it no longer has to stay portrait within the app. There's a functionality for it to accept both. And I would say, I think audiences are pretty jaded with duplication of content. So people who post it to their YouTube and also to their IGTV and maybe also to their blog, people are looking for something exclusive on IGTV. Mm-hmm. So that I think it's a different tone for most people on Instagram. And I kind of, the way I look about it, if you think about like a business, Facebook is where you would get the very corporate, very tidy, very impersonal interaction. Twitter, mm-hmm. you might get a little bit more friendly, kind of personalized feedback, one-to-one tweets. But Instagram, if you go there for a brand, you're usually looking for something more like a behind the scenes, more of a human connection, something that you wouldn't see anywhere else. Mm-hmm. And I think video is a really great way to explore that and to kind of show like a day in the life of your business or a day in the life of your creative process.
Yeah.
And let people into a little window of your world you've not shown before.
If I think about the Instagram stories that for me have worked best, they have been a lot of the behind the scenes stuff, you know, how I set up for a food shot or how I edit. So those have really generally been the most successful ones. So I could see how that could then also translate to IGTV. And so maybe taking, you know, the stats from the Instagram stories as an indicator as to what your audience might like on IGTV, maybe that's a good way forward.
Like, this is one of the beautiful gifts of Instagram, is you are constantly getting marketing feedback on everything you create. And we don't always think of it that way, but like if a post does really well, there's a reason and you can kind of dig in and find out why. And likewise with stories, if there's a topic where you go, oh my gosh, this has generated like five times the number of DMs that I usually get, then that is a sign that it's something to go and explore. And that you could turn that into an IGTV, you could turn it into a caption for a post, it could be a blog post, it could be a podcast, it could be a newsletter. But like, if we don't pay attention to that information, we're kind of squandering this amazing gift that's been given to us. And it's something that conventionally, like, businesses and creators had to pay a fortune to access. You know, you'd have to do focus groups and market research. We get to just post our breakfast and get that kind of information for free.
Yeah, actually, I remember, this is a total sideline, but I remember being in high school and we got paid, I think, a tenner or something to go to a focus group.
Yeah, I used to do it when I was a teenager for like extra cash.
Whatever, exactly 20 quid or whatever it was. Yeah, back in the day, man, I just had a flash. Sarah, I would love to go on to talk about your book, but before we get there, I just have one more question, because this is something that came up in my creative community. They said, please do not let Sarah go without asking this question.
Oh, okay.
With Instagram being so crowded, noisy, how do you get noticed by brands? How can you earn money as a quote unquote influencer on Instagram? Any tips you can share on that topic?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think it kind of goes back to that community thing, like building genuine community and authority within that community for whatever it is you talk about. I think more and more brands are getting wise to the difference now, that kind of the influencer that the tabloids like to throw in front of us, you know, that who will advertise absolutely everything and anything, and kind of this lack of authenticity in what they're doing. Maybe there's some bought followers or bought likes. Mm. Brands are finally, it's been a slow process, but they're finally seeing the difference.
Yeah.
And they're seeing the difference in how it converts to sales, because obviously, like, if you go for a fashion influencer to promote your lawnmower, for example, you're not going to get as many sales as if you went to a smaller but more engaged community of gardeners and chose an influencer from there. So in terms of getting noticed, if there's a particular brand that you think you're a great match for, I am a big believer in going and flirting with them. Mm-hmm. Follow them, send them some messages, comment on their posts, and then maybe pitch them. When I was first starting out as an influencer, which when I first left my old day job, that was my main source of income. Mm-hmm. I pitched, like, every day I would send pitches out. And I think it's kind of people... it's a very passive industry, the influencer industry. You're sat there refreshing your inbox, waiting for people to find you and waiting for these pitches to come your way. But if you can write a great pitch and if you can sell yourself, then you can kind of circumnavigate that system and get ahead. So I would contact, you know, individual brands. If you're starting out and you've done no sponsored work, then maybe look at just exchange for product for a post, which is a really great place to start. Because if you're reaching out for products that you genuinely want in your life, that can feel like a fair exchange when you're first starting out. Obviously, there comes a point where the amount of work you've put in to establish your account and to hone your skills means that actually there needs to be payment for that to be a fair exchange of time and energy. But
can I ask, do you think there's value in someone who has a following of quote unquote just 2,000 or 3,000? Do you still think there's value in flirting with brands and reaching out to them?
Absolutely. I think be realistic. Like, you're probably not going to get L'Oreal to come and like want to work with you straight away.
Although, who wants L'Oreal anyway?
Well, exactly, right? So look at the people who you genuinely like are connected with their brands and their products and genuinely use or want to use in your life. And if you are their right target customer, the chances are that your audience will be their target customer too. And as a small business myself, like, to get in front of 2,000, 3,000 people who may not already know about what I'm doing, that's an amazing opportunity. And so many brands, especially small business owners, they know it's something they need to do. They know that it works. They have no idea how to get into it. How they're asking the exact same question from the opposite end of the spectrum. And your email landing in their inbox to say, I love what you do. I love what you create. Here's an idea I've got about how I could help promote you. That is a gift. Mm. That is a gift that they're going to be so grateful that you reached out with.
Yeah, I think that's a really beautiful way of putting it. Thank you for that. Now, Sarah, not only are you incredible on Instagram, but you have also written a best-selling book about Instagram, and I'm so happy. I have a copy, and I'd love for you to talk to us a little bit about how the book came about, and also, why would anybody want it? What's in it? Why did you create it?
Oh, it was a real emotional process for me to get this book written. So I think when you have a certain size of following, you get occasional book offers that kind of land in your inbox because publishers have finally figured out that people with a large audience can sell a decent volume of books. Mm-hmm. And so I'd been turning down offers here and there that just didn't feel like the right fit. And then eventually was approached with a really open offer to just create something about Instagram. And it was one of those moments of like, oh, I've not got the capacity, I've not got the time, but I know I have to say yes to this, like a real gut feeling of I had to say yes. So it took me about 2 years in total to write, just because I was squeezing it in alongside everything else I was doing. And I tried to write it as a handbook for people like us, kind of creative people who want to have a really positive and enjoyable relationship with Instagram, want to use this powerful app to enrich their lives and hopefully to enrich their business or whatever it is they're trying to do in life, but are also kind of trying to nurture their creativity at the same time and don't want to sell out all of their values and all of their ambitions in the name of kind of just building a following.
And I know you also have an Instagram course. How is your, which is called the Insta Retreat, I think?
It is, yes.
So how's the Insta Retreat different to your book? Actually, I didn't say the name. It's hashtag authentic. So how is hashtag authentic different to your course?
So someone once described the course as being like an A-level in Instagram. Mm-hmm. So the book is kind of aimed at everybody, and there's a level of support I think that you can and can't offer people in a book. Like you have to give them all the information and then they're kind of on their own. Whereas with a course, you can provide a higher level of detail and analysis because you can be there to answer their questions and to kind of guide them through it. Mm-hmm. So the course is much more for people who maybe want to grow a business and maybe a bit more prepared to play the game that you need to do in order to grow a really meaningful following on Instagram these days. Whereas the book, I was trying to aim it more generally at kind of people who maybe they don't know why they're on Instagram yet, or they know that they want to do something with it, but the first step is reconnecting with their creativity and rediscovering like what it is they're here for.
Gotcha. I mean, having read the book, I have to say, like, it is helpful, But actually, it goes back to something we talked about at the very start of this podcast episode, just having something outside of a digital platform to take inspiration from and to just stimulate my brain. Like, that's how I've enjoyed your book. You know, just like a little bit of escapism, thinking, oh, you know what, I could do this or I could do that. Or, you know, it's been really lovely having it. So thank you for spending 2 years writing it.
Really, well, I love hearing that. And that's been one of the main pieces of feedback, is that people are really inspired by it. People say it's kind of fired them back up again and given them kind of their creative urges back. And a few times this last few months, I've been like, I need someone to write my book for me, because it's not working for me, because I know it too well. You know every word by the time you finish it. But I'm glad that I've been able to give that gift to everybody else. I just need someone to give it to me now.
It'll come, Sarah. Now, before I let you go, I always end the podcast with three questions. And that's mainly, you know, what's your most favorite thing to eat? What's your most favorite thing to capture? And what's your most favorite thing to share?
Oh, so the eat one is huge. Like, how do people just pick one? Because I'm such a foodie.
Yeah, some people cheat and they say like Korean food.
Oh yeah, a nice big bracket. I mean, my ultimate favorite thing to eat was my grandma's Christmas dinner. She's no longer with us, but all of my memories of that plate of food once a year are just so joyful. And when I recreate it myself in every December, like the smell, everything about that is just pure joy for me. Aww. So Christmas dinner is my favorite thing to eat. My favorite thing to capture is just that point in life where the magic kind of meets the mundane. So it can be, you know, just your cup of tea on the kitchen table, but then the sunlight comes in and maybe it makes a pattern against the wood. And that right there is my favorite thing to grab hold of and keep with a photograph, so that I can always look back on it and have those moments. And then my favorite thing to share, I mean, I could, again, this could be forever, but there's a quote that I use so much in when I'm teaching and in my classes, and it's, the trees that are slow to grow bear the most fruit. And I think that that has such parallels for everything we're doing with our creativity and in the online world.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much, Sarah. I will pop all the links to where people can find you on Instagram, your blog, your book, everything in the show notes. And thank you so, so much for your time.
Thank you too. It's been absolutely lovely.
Who else was listening to this episode and going, dang, I want to do the 100 day project this year. I want to really dig into my creativity. That was me anyways. But if 100 day or 365 days seems a little bit too much, then why not join my free Instagram food photography challenge? Registration for the autumn challenge opens up this August. I'm going to pop the link to that in the show notes so you can pre-register now so you don't miss it. As mentioned before, I will also pop that link to the free PDF with the 6 tools I use to leverage my Instagram in the show notes so that you can download it, as well as a link to my Instagram series, blog posts all about how to leverage your Instagram. What I'll also do is pop some podcast episodes that tackle the topic of Instagram in the show notes too. So if you enjoyed this, you can go to the show notes and find some more episodes that tackle Instagram. And yeah, I hope it's going to be super helpful. But most importantly, I will be popping all the details to Sarah, where you can find her, in the show notes too. She's got an amazing podcast called #Authentic. Of course, she's Me and Orla on Instagram. She's got her Me and Orla blog, and then #Authentic, the book. So links to all of those will be in the show notes. That's it from me. I'm going to be back with one final bonus episode a little bit later in the summer. I'm going to take August off to spend it with my boy and with the man in my life, and then back at you sort of late August, early September, with one more bonus episode before we dig into season 3. Until then, I look forward to connecting with you on Instagram and wish you a super, super fun and creative summer. Before I leave you, I wanted to say thank you so, so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoy the podcast. I also wanted to let you know that this podcast was brought to you by my free creative community, the Eat, Capture, Share Creative Community on Facebook, formerly known as the Food Photo Insta Creative Community, and I'd love for you to join. I will pop the details on how you can join my creative community in the show notes, so do go and check it out. Also, if you enjoy the podcast, it means so much if you can rate, review, and subscribe. All those things will help the podcast to grow and to reach the right audience. And yeah, you'd kind of make my day. All right, see you soon. Take care. Bye.